Free Wisdom.
Welcome back to the Free Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Latif.
I'm your co-host, Malcolm Voltaire.
And we're jumping in today with another great guest, a special guest this time. As always, I'm going to let him introduce himself, and we're going to jump in.
What's good? My name is Fani, of Original Fani Design, owner Closet.
Yeah, man. So, yeah, starting off, man, how you feeling today? You know?
Pretty good, man. You know, it's a rainy day. Got a lot of stuff to do. And just troubleshooting some stuff. But, you know, we good.
Okay, cool, man. Yeah, so, you know, how's jumping in, you know, I want to ask you, how's a day in the life of Fani and, you know, operating Closet and Original Fani? But before jumping there, I want to know kind of the start and of how you got towards, you know, design and fashion. How'd you get your foot in the door? How'd you get inspired? Who was Fani before you decided to design?
I'm really into, like, design. I first started getting into design just with, like, action figures and, like, playing SmackDown, creating players. I was like, man, you can do a lot. So that's where I think it started when I was young. From there, I found myself, like, I was always in the arts programs as a kid. I went to Tri-Cities. And then they were telling me about, like, digital art and, like, how it would be dope to, like, you know, do work on the computer. I started, like, making some cartoons in PowerPoint. Then somebody introduced me to Photoshop and Illustrator, which I didn't start working in until, like, later down the line. But, you know, the way I was using PowerPoint and manipulating Photoshop a little bit, I started making, like, some flyers and cover arts for my friends. So, you know, that's kind of what started, like, me doing graphic art for people. Mm-hmm. And then really also sophomore, junior year, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, going to Tri-Cities, but I really got into, like, Lupe Fiasco a lot. Mm-hmm. He was talking a lot about, like, Japanese streetwear. I mean, streetwear as a whole, I was into Mark Echo, yeah. Zoo York, a lot of his brands, LRG, Academics. Yeah. I was just talking to somebody from LRG about it too, because, again, like that Kanye doc, College Dropout, Lupe Fiasco, streetwear, kind of like all learned about all that stuff at the same time. So that's when I fell in love with it. But Lupe was talking about some like stuff I hadn't heard about like that.
What year did you graduate?
I graduated in 07.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
So
That's my favorite era of fashion. Like,
where?
That 06, 07 era.
Yeah. That's Pharrell, yeah, BBC, Ice Cream. Everybody's kind of learning about it around that era. So that's what got me into streetwear. But I was just doing graphics, thinking like, okay, working with artists, you know, would be a good platform for my graphic design. Mm-hmm. So I could like maybe do a cover art for maybe one of my favorite rappers one day. It was like how I started it. Maybe that, or I was thinking like maybe I could do like a like interviews or something like that. And I also had come across a platform that was Ill Roots. Mm-hmm. So Ill Roots, then like 2-9, mm-hmm. all of these things. Like I was like, oh, I'll start a blog, and then I have T-shirts to go along with the blog. So that's mm-hmm. how I made the T-shirt. Still didn't have the idea to like make it a brand or anything. It was just like, oh, like this would be something dope I can like use to represent myself and for like friends and family. Mm-hmm. And then merchandise, coming up with like merchandise ideas for 2-9 and stuff.
How did your relationship begin with 2-9? Were you always a part?
Just real fast. I mean, like I met Jace. Jace mm-hmm. introduced me to Siege. Kurt did a project with a bunch of members of 2-9 before 2-9 formed. Mm. We were all hanging out at Morehouse and CAU and the AUC, I should say, actually. Yeah. That's how we met B-Wright. B-Wright had a brand called Cremo. We were wearing that. Mm. And then we were just like a crew of people. Key came up with the name 2-9. Him and Kurt were already friends. y'all just started hanging out. 2-9 was born. B-Wright was working with illustrators. I was working, you know, as like a graphic designer as well. So we kind of shared there the kind of those crafts and that experience. And then, boom, 2-9. He started working with Mike Will. Yeah. Mike Will signed 2-9. That's that.
You feel like that was like your first time experiencing that creative hub? Like,
no, because, I mean, again, I studied like this creativity, just falling in love with like those same brands we were talking about.
So yeah, it's
like, this is my first time experiencing that. And then just, you know.
Well, I was going to like Tri-Cities. Being actively, okay, so in school you was actively involved in like,
yeah, going to Tri-Cities. I mean, I was in the Art Magnet program, so that's we were fire. Always working on some kind of like, I mean, in the Art Magnet program, you got to go through like all experiences of art, art history. And then my mom is an art historian as well, so.
That's dope. Bro.
It's like that creativity and knowledge. And again, if you were in hip-hop in 06, I mean, everybody didn't take the same things out of it, but
yeah.
It's like Pharrell didn't pop first, NERD pop first, so it's like it was like a collective effort.
Exactly.
I see what you're saying. But it's like it was still, you can see from his doc, it was a collective effort, and it was birthed out of like all of those same like thoughts in Chicago, whether it was Lupe, Common, it's like this conscious, like even the Cool Kids. Yep. Kids in the Hall. It was a bunch of different groups coming out. They were all in the same like wavelength, you know. But yeah, my experience with it. I mean, even we started Retro Sushi prior to 2-9, just in college. Just me and Jace. We both like streetwear. We both like Japanese culture. Met Siege through Jace. Siege played beats. I was like, these are crazy. Y'all should be a rap group. That was that, and that was like. Oh, like that was like 2-3 years before 2-9. So, Chilio, all those people running around with them. That was still prior to 2-9 started. Because 2-9 is 2009 is what it stood for. But probably not until 2010 and 2011 was when we kind of like made it a company and like identified what it was. So, I mean, that's just that on that.
Yeah. And then how was that, you know, as an individual, you know, here I am, like, you 07, I'm graduating 2013. So I come into Atlanta 2014 and start to watch and see, like, and get inspired. So I'm watching you, I'm watching 2-9, I'm watching, you know, whatever, at the time, how Wish was impacting the community. And I remember seeing an event, and a lot of events where all y'all was connected. How did those come about? Did those play like a big part? And some of those, like some of your defining moments as 2-9, as Fonny, as the whole entire team?
I don't think so, because like it's not until we got to Creative Loafing, like that was like maybe a defining moment where I got an opportunity to like say I was doing creative direction for 2-9, but like my prominence doesn't really come until like after 2-9 in certain ways. Like I was, it's kind of like, I mean, yeah, I was like a member and I was doing a lot of creative work, but it was behind the scenes, you know what I mean? So like, and then I was doing a bunch of different things, whether it be styling, video treatments, like a creative director would, but I mean, not even until Virgil and like Yeezus did people kind of like
understand that concept
exactly in that term, like what that meant, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, I was just like the homie, you know, from what people could see from the outside looking in. So that's how I look at
that. Correct me if I'm wrong, bro, but I feel like you like are adamant of like, you look at it from more of a studying perspective. Like,
yeah.
And I don't think people often do that shit, bro. Like, especially like wanting to do fashion. It's cool. It's fly. And I always bring it back to like this hoop dream concept, because that was the first time for me where I fell in love with an allure before I fell in love with the work that it took to do it.
Yeah.
So I think it's dope that, like, you, like, even to this day, you, like, even when you speak, it feels like you're a professor. You know what I'm saying? Like, where you can tell you study what you're doing. It's not, everything is intentional to a certain extent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, like, the difference. I was just explaining to somebody, like, it's not, like, Gucci says Gucci. Bape says Bape. I mean, but, like, the way Nigo moved the camo was very sacred, and it was like synonymous with Bape in the head, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to know those things mean Bape before you're like just a shirt that says BAPE on it. Like, mm-hmm. nobody gives a fuck. Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, or a bathing ape. It's like, Bape is just an abbreviation for the full name of the brand. But like, you know, like, that's like, those things weren't all common knowledge, you know?
Yeah.
And then even furthermore, like, you know, Nigo and his like involvement, that even came later, because like, it's not even that everyone was who was synonymous with the brand was synonymous with like, or informed on who owned it, you know? But those, the, a lot of that information and care for that knowledge just comes with the internet. And it's like, you know, keep in mind when we're doing 2-9 and stuff like that, it's like Tumblr, and then there's Ill Roots. So that's why Original Fani started as a blog, so I could just like have my own like source of the information that I was studying, because other than that, it's like everybody didn't care, you know what I mean? And they weren't made to care, because like obviously Instagram, visuals, clothes, they all tie in together. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Facts.
And it's, yeah, and back to it, you know, what Malcolm, you know, gained from listening to you speak is something that I see a comparison of, you know, looking at the outside, looking in of wisdom, and where I was headed even at the beginning was a blog, was a blog spot page directly from being around all those other blogs, but in a different way. Because it was kind of merging, like I wanted a magazine. I wanted a approach of merging, creating a brand with a blog rather than kind of a place to examine like everything you're soaking in or wanting to grow in and be a part of, you know? And it's just an interesting like contrast to see the differences in that, but see it all merge at the end of the day into one thing. But you spoke about, you know, the name Original Fani, and it started out as a blog. You know, what was that moment where it transitioned for you when it turned into clothing, turned into something bigger than this blog?
Well, so like I said, with the blog and stuff, like, you know, I made the T-shirt one as like some way, like, again, I took that from Ill Roots, because I said, like, every once in a while they'll have an artist or wearing their shirt. So I said, okay, like, when I'm posting these, like, people's songs and music or skater on my blog, like, they might have the cover art, but then I would want to use a picture of them wearing Original Fani, you know? And keep in mind, like, the shirt start for promotional use only. That was, like, the mantra for the shirts and also, like, the website. So it's like, I wasn't selling them. I was just giving them out. Then subsequently, like, I'm doing graphic design, so, like, Metro's like, do the language cover. I'm like, okay, cool, I did your cover, and here's a T-shirt. Like, you know, it's like a gift that comes along with my services, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that was the whole idea when I started. And then, like, again, I started blogging, and I had, like, a WordPress blog, and it was, like, a .com. So when I started, similar to this day, like, I remember talking to Money Making Neek, and he was like, we met at Morehouse one day, and he was like, yeah, I've been trying to get with y'all. And I was like, people didn't know I was doing the blog by myself. I just wake up, take some posts from Hypebeast I like, tape some stuff from Ill Roots I like. But it started to get more unique as I had, like, exclusives to premiere from my artist that was friends. So, Retro Sushi, you know. And again, when you say 2-9, it's like a collective, and like, yeah, it was a collective, but we didn't even, like, we just moved as artists within the collective. So Curtis and Fat Kid's brother, like, posting their music. Even when Key left 2-9, like, his website was my website, originalfani.com, and I was going to post his stuff. So I posted what, Live Slow, Die Old, or not Live Slow, but I posted Mother's on my website, and through that, like, fucked the brand, hit me up, because they were like, they just didn't know how to get in contact with Key. They figured, like, oh, we'll connect with this webpage, you know? So I kind of just got away from blogging a little bit. I mean, especially as 2-9 pick started picking up. For one, like, a lot of the exclusivity I had with the group started going to, like, other blogs, which, I mean, I used to talk to, like, we would butt heads about that, where it's like, oh, I want to drop this song. But it's like, it's actually a better look for Complex to premiere it, which we thought at the time. Like, it was a better look for it to be balanced, you know, and then premiere when I premiere, or even, like, and then we had a 2-9 Tumblr as well. So a lot of that just kind of changed my energy from, like, running my blog to kind of, like, putting all my energy into 2-9 and just all my ideas, merchandise, we toured, all this stuff. So, like, I kind of stopped with the blog, but then I was like, man, I need to make an accessory, because people were like, wouldn't always have the shirts, but like, you wouldn't wear the shirt on every performance. If Curtis performed in one city in a one shirt, then he wouldn't perform, like, an original Fonny shirt on the biggest performance, which I was like, well, we need that look. So I was like, man, it would be cool if I had an accessory. And around the same time, I started wearing bandanas. I had got dreads, and I just started wearing bandanas a lot. And I still have the two bandanas, but it's like, I had a neighborhood bandana and a bait bandana, and I bought them both for like $45. I was like, damn, that's kind of expensive for a bandana, because they're typically like $2. So I feel like $45 is kind of like a niche or an expensive bandana, but just a bandana. I made the bandanas, but still under this whole idea, like, we were going to South by Southwest. So, like I said, touring with 2-9, and we're going to South by Southwest. And I just was like, I just took them with me because it was like cheap to produce them. And then I could produce a lot. So I probably made like 40 to 60 bandanas, and I was just giving them out at South by Southwest with certain people. Like, say if I'm like, if I gave Sway Lee a bandana, there's someone watching me and watching him perform, and then they didn't say like, oh, that's cool, can I buy one? And I'm like, oh shit, like, I'll probably sell these. So I started selling for $25, then $35, then $45, and then
that's real.
And so that transition, now here you are in finding this moment of like, okay, I put my logo on these t-shirts, and I've ran into this, you know, this situation where these accessories were a smarter look for the looks that I'm trying to achieve, and now this transition now with these accessories and where Original Fonny is headed, what direction now are you headed in? You know, is it, you know, mainly
I mean, right now, everything is about just structuring and just finding more ways to remove myself. Because, like I said, this whole time, I've been doing a lot of everything that people see. Or, like, I talked to a kid the other day. He came in the store. He's looking at the store. Then he's like, oh, who owns it? So then we start talking. And then he's like, oh, you got the Fonny stuff in here. Then it's like, what's your name? And then I'm like, you know, I get his name. Then I'm like, I'm Fonny. He's like, oh, whoa. Like, I didn't know that you were Fonny. And I didn't even know the person doing the brand was black. And I'm okay with that, you know? Like, but then it's like, you know, even that conversation, like, somebody else could have been having that conversation with him. So I can continue to just kind of, like, focus on other shit. You know what I mean?
You got to create that space.
Yeah. I mean, which we do by, you know, not making it like all about me, although it's all about like my taste level and the things I like, but it's not all about like putting my face or my name on everything. Like, going back to saying like Gucci or like Palm Angels or like a lot of the shit says it on it, like, and that's what people are attracted to, because it's like, and I mean, even if you look at a designer like Denma, like, he understands that, where it's like, yeah, Balenciaga could do a lot of different things, but then you really want to buy the word Balenciaga. So we're going to just start writing that everywhere on stuff, like, in different ways, instead of, like, really getting avant-garde. It's like
wearing about textures and patterns and
Balenciaga is like streetwear though, if you ask me. Where people say streetwear is dead, I'd say like Balenciaga looks like streetwear to me. You know what I mean?
A lot of money in the streetwear looks. Yeah. Streetwear dead. They want a lot of
hoodies and sneakers and sweatpants and denim and
all of it. Yeah.
So I, you know,
the Alias. It's the brand around it.
Correct.
That creates the creates the lifestyle of it and then separates it. So now the taste level is different. When it's almost like the idea of putting an old tin can, like Virgil said, in a museum versus leaving it in the middle of the street. It's like streetwear in the street is just something you walk past. Like, okay, it's just, you know, these young kids.
That's just like subjective to language, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
that's true. Yeah.
So what? Like, you know what I mean? Like, and then it also, too, it really kind of like, it aligned with like the path and vision of what he wanted to do. You know what I mean? Like, everyone doesn't think or look at it like that way. Exactly. But, you know, it's also like some artists who are like, you always have artists come out and they'll be like, I'm not a rapper. Like, Jeezy was doing that a lot, which was tight for Jeezy because it was like, he was, his whole thing, I'm so authentic.
I'm a trap star.
So authentic to the streets, I'm not a rapper. You know, and it's like, cool. But then it's like, we still have to put him in that genre of rappers and greatest rappers from Atlanta and stuff like that. But it aligned with his narrative and what he was trying to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I look at that.
Yeah, man. And, you know, pivoting from that, in the roots of like starting your brand to now having a store, you know, did this idea of having the Closet Store always something you wanted to pursue, or it just came about? How did it come about?
This space came about through City of Ink. City of Ink already had like ownership of the space, and City of Ink is like where I actually started the first place. I had my bandanas available, similar to like how we run this space is like. I met the owners. I knew the owners. I was cool with them. I was like, I'm working on this project. I want to sell it here. And they didn't even take anything from me. It's so funny, like way before I even knew the guy or anybody, I think Young Bands was one of the first people to actually pull up to City of Ink and buy a bandana.
Nice.
So from there, they started doing, like they had an art show. There was once a year until the pandemic, but I mean, they had an art show, a lot of the, you know, art community, which I'm really cool with, you know, your Paper Franks, Corey Davis, Maya Bailey, Tuki Carter, would have, like, art at these art shows and bring out a lot of people. So I did a collab with City of Ink, original Phoniac City of Ink, probably like 4 or 5 years ago, which I was like, hey, let's release this during the art show. Sold pretty well. Then I was like, you know, initially, like, I think the first year, like, it was kind of like online, a little bit of everywhere. But this by the second year, I kind of had it structured out a little bit more to just have it sold here. It did really well. And then I was like, I got an idea. I got a vision for this space, which Closet, that name, I mean, for one, it's like a closet, like, where you store your clothes at. So that's kind of one of the ideas. But there's also was a boutique in Paris called Colette, where I kind of took the idea from to Colette. It's like, it's no longer exists, but during the time that it did exist, it's like, again, one of the world's number one boutiques, like a Dover Street Market or like even like a Wish. Just a boutique, and they hold different clothes, books, from all tiers. They have like fucking Colette had everything from like Gucci to like BBC and artist merchandise who like cool artists who want to drop their shit in Colette. So music in their release parties, like, you know, like kind of like this Life of Paris. So it's, again, it's the same idea because it's not the Fani store. It's like a store for Atlanta and designers and artists in Atlanta. all the photography on the wall is like Atlanta photographers, and you know, I took some of those pictures as well. Or like models, you know, it's just inclusive to the city, which like a brand should be.
Yeah. And just to pivot off that, because you said a lot of how you structure in Closet is exactly how brands should be with their city, with the industry and things like that. So, you know, as I think about, you know, Atlanta, right, or, you know, any small city that's, well, I wouldn't say a small city, but any city that doesn't have the same infrastructure to maintain certain industries, like a fashion industry, you know, and it's growing to that place. You know, here we are creating fashion shows, and we know how much those cost for our brands, or, you know, and we're relating ourselves to how these things work on a schedule in countries or in places around the world that actually invest into these industries. So, you know, here we are in Atlanta putting together fashion shows that traditionally cost $3 million for like a Balenciaga to do, but here we are doing it for under $5,000, $10,000. Than just to do it for people to come take a picture and see it. But in reality, it's supposed to be meant for buyers, for people to come and see a brand and be attracted to the story and the image of this new season that you drop, so much so that they are now like pushed to buy it. But that transition piece is like Closet being a place who kind of honors the culture of Atlanta and showcases it, you know. Do you feel other stores in Atlanta should be doing that? Are they even able to do that? And I'm talking about, whether you're talking Saks Fifth to Wish to Amom and Year, you know, should these brands come to our fashion shows as designers here in the city with the hopes and intentions of buying us?
I mean, like, fashion isn't, like, subjective to one place. I mean, there's certain ideas that are, like, and everyone has a different vision for their brand, you know what I mean? So it's like, but it really takes like multiple people to like facilitate a brand, because like if somebody's like, they like Burberry, that doesn't mean they like wear all high fashion brands. Like a lot of people have like, oh, I like these brands, or I like this group of brands. So it still takes everybody. So it's like, and it's because it's fashion. So it's like, it's kind of like hard to like narrow it down and say like, because for instance, like Closet, yeah, we have like an idea of running things for the city, but it's also about bringing things here. It was a kid I bumped into at this pop-up. Well, first off, it was a pop-up. It was the Merino Infantry pop-up. That's ASAP Ant. He's from Baltimore, you know what I mean? Coming to Atlanta to do a pop-up. And he's bringing all that whole energy and the ASAP energy, and they from Harlem. Yeah. And then there's a kid at the pop-up who says, man, finally, I really appreciate you for bringing Japanese culture to the South. I'm big on Japanese culture. Everybody else might not be big on that. So is Anwar Carrots. That's how our brands just can connect. We look at, like, we study the same shit, but everybody don't study the same stuff that I study. So they shouldn't necessarily be trying. It might not make sense for us to work together. Yep. And that's important that, you know, there is a niche. There is like, everything ain't the same, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, with brands coming here, that's needed. Like there was also back in this time, 2010 and shit, like, there was like a Y3 store here. Mm. Shit, there was a Y3 store here and a Barney's here. Those stores couldn't stay afloat here because there was not enough people who cared about that fashion. There wasn't Instagram, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I'm pretty sure. Barney
was in the mall, like.
It was in Phipps.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and then it just wasn't a market here to support fashion on that level, so they fell under, you know. I remember going to that Y3 store and I would get something there for like 60% off, happy, like I got some Y3, my first Y3, but then it's like, that's not the point of that store, you know. They're trying to sell it for 100%, you know, and it's not just because they're just trying to tax everybody. Like Y3, like, it was a dope ass store where they're trying to pay employees a lot of money. So it's like, when you understand like how things have to be structured, you know, and that goes back to Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lack there of a lot of things, but there's a lack there of a lot of money too, or the money that runs into the industries of fashion correctly. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, it's that there's a lot of different issues, you know, but there is needed to be a balance between like things coming into the city and then things happening from the city. It's not like one way or the other way, you know? Mm-hmm. And those are how New York and LA can run. It's like, yeah, New York, but then, yeah, everyone's flying to New York to do business there from everywhere in the world. And the same thing in LA. And they have offices there, even if they're in Paris. We still have a New York office because we got to be on the ground in New York. So, like, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, on that note, too, because I feel that way, I feel like, you know, same way when it comes to everything's not the same thing. You know, some things require like their own culture, own idea, own structure, own appreciation, own level, takes level of art. But you know, thinking about that and thinking about how those brands, I guess, those same brands we talk about, whether it's a Barney's, whether it's a, you know,
and those are just the store, just to, yeah, like, because obviously too, like with the internet, which I spoke about too, is so important because those stores can survive on the internet and stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas like a brick and mortar store where you gotta pay people and have lights and shit, like it's a different mechanics, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like a brand, the way a brand and a store can operate are completely different.
Completely, yeah. Yeah.
So speak to that a little bit about your process, like, because I feel like you are kind of creating your own, I have created your own web outside of just the city where, I mean, it might be because of the internet. Just kind of speak to that, like.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, it's subjective to my interest and stuff like that. So, like, I've been in some Japanese stores and I've done some collab with some Japanese brands, but that's where I want to go. I never was worried about, like, Europe like that. As I grew in fashion and stuff, I realized, like, man, like, it is really dope to be able to sell your stuff for some pounds, because I bought some stuff for some pounds and it's really expensive. I've sent money to Europe to do something and I had to send double because of the currency exchange. Mm-hmm. But, so, you know, that's how I thought about that. And then meeting brands, I've been to Paris once and meeting brands, if you look at like a Places and Faces in the Marc Noir, they do streetwear, but they're in Paris. So it's not too hard to find like a supermodel, because the girls who run around in Paris be supermodels. Exactly. Same way like the girls who running around in Atlanta be strippers sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's like not like, there's no negativity on that. It's a trade that's practiced a lot in a certain area, you know what I mean? And if that's what you want to do, it can be like conducive to that in that space. You know what I mean? So like I seeked out what I wanted and what makes sense for me. I also don't wholesale. So when I came and sat here in City of Ink or Closet before it was Closet, I'm like, well, I need a place where people can come and get my stuff directly for me. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if you're like, you know, Anwar or certain brands whose goal is to wholesale and get in as many stores as possible, that might not be your focus till down the line. Yeah. You might say, oh, I want to get 10 stores solid that I can just rock out with forever, you know? Mm-hmm. And that a lot of brands do stuff like that, like, you know, especially like corporately speaking, like, or Stussy, like whatever stores they're in, probably maintain those relationships and just be in there every season, just every season. Mm. Like PacSun too, though. It's like, if you're set up to be in PacSun or Urban Outfitters, it's about the long game, you know? And like, like 10 years, they might do a huge order. But you've been in there for 10 years, every time you drop, you know you're sending a collection to Urban Outfitters. So it's like, that's the thing with like the brands and stuff, because it's like everything is like structured and stuff and should be to your brand and how you want it to be.
And I understand what you're saying, because even the trickle down from with the buyers, it's like how you drop is catered to the buyers as well.
Right.
Everything is around. But with the way it seems like you're doing it, and I would, just the way I see everybody doing it, mainly because of the internet, is just shifting to, I'm catering to my audience, how my audience, you know what I'm saying, well, however I want
to
drop.
Like, right. Yeah, but in that, what advice you would give to, like, the brands that's below you or, like, coming up after you? Or you just in the city and you see, oh, this kid's 16,
well, so got a brand. Still goes back to research and stuff because... Mm-hmm. Like, people don't, what you see is not always what it is, you know what I mean? So it's like, you would need, like, and I just went through this with some PR, and they say, like, okay, what do you like and what don't you like? You know, and again, like, that's the whole thing about money. Money is, like, you can get money doing anything, you know? Yeah, like, right. So that's not really, that doesn't say, like, what you like and what you don't like, you know what I mean? Like, McDonald's, they sell burgers. You know, so Chick-fil-A sells chicken, like, and they kill chicken. They don't sell anything else. Exactly. Like, they got salads, they added to it, but they sell chicken. Chicken salad, chicken, that's
that ain't
it.
Going nowhere.
That's what they do. So it's like, once you know, like, I'm Chick-fil-A, then you can say, like, oh, I want to do this. I want to do this. I don't want to do that. We're not going to do a fish sandwich because we're Chick-fil-A. Yep. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing because these ideas of branding that I put into my brand, they go into just like all different types of brands. Coca-Cola does it the same way too. Yep. You know what I mean? Starbucks does it the same way too.
So, and then so you would say it's a time game then for like young brands because it's like you got to find out what you do first, you know?
Not necessarily because you might know like I want to get the money doing this. Uh-huh. I think that's why a lot of like some younger brands are able to like excel faster because they just know what they want. You know what I mean? If you look at like a lot of the brands connected to like, you know, certain artists, darker artists, maybe Lil Pump, Cardi, you know, certain like artists in a certain brand realm, like it's just about that, you know? So they just make stuff about that. They just make stuff, even take a hype land. Like he's like, I just want to make anime stuff. So I'm going to set my stuff up to make just anime, do anime deals. And yeah, sure enough, he did Naruto, Hello Kitty collabs and all these things because that's what he wanted to do. And he knew exactly, I'm going to do everything to align myself with anime companies and do shit like that. You know? Yeah.
And you think like creatives that are in our community lack that direction or, you know, yeah, lack that direction of like, look, I know exactly where I want to go. Is it something like they're seeing first? We talked about first seeing a lore of something. Oh, it looks fun and look like that, and to take that photo and to be that of your city. But why are you doing it? You know, how important is that? You know, why that finding that and people in our community. How do we like show them that or, you know?
Well, so that's the thing I think, and I keep like I don't want to say I keep, but that's one of the things that's interesting in Atlanta and just with everyone. It's like I can't answer everyone's whys. You know what I mean? That's that goes.
You gotta find your why.
That's the separation between this and that. You know what I mean? Like there's not one why. There's not. It's subjective to every different person and how they want and. If they thought about that more, then, you know, they could have a look. It's like, I might not have all the money in the world, but people often come to me and they're like, oh, we want what you want and what your brand has and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, because I built it that way. You know what I mean? And you couldn't even build it that way because you would have to do it the way you want to do it. You know what I mean? To have that same enjoyment of it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's like... It's not necessarily merchandise, you know, where merchandise is like kind of based around a moment or just one idea, but it's a lot of complexities into my brand. So it's like, how are you going to have your complexities and why? I don't know, you know, that's why.
I think that's the answer people needed to hear, though, a lot of times people get confused, like being inspired by something versus copy and paste. You know what I mean? You can copy and paste something, but that don't mean you know the intricate details behind like what inspired it and then why it's inspiring you to create something else that may remind somebody of that, but it's this. You know what I mean? Like I'm creating this world.
Well, yeah, and then like a lot of people copy and paste with the wrong idea, which is like this is going to work for me the way it works for the person. So if you're okay with... that not being there, then that's cool. Go on. Yeah. Like, it's like how people chase trends and stuff. I mean, it could work still. Like,
that's true.
You can drop a ski mask or a hat. I bet you're going to sell it right now. It's not going to sell like Kanye West
one. But then go back to what he's saying, too. It's like, it's how, what are you trying to create? Yeah, like, what is your perspective?
It's almost like...
You trying to make bread, or you trying to, like, express something and then create a... You know what I'm saying? It's layers, though.
Yeah, it's layers to art. Yeah. It's a world that you want to enter, like a fashion designer creating a fashion show on the $3 million budget level look, but he only spent $2,000 and he's from a certain place where he just didn't have the resources. But now the brands around the world are like, I love what this guy loves. And it's like, okay, and then now people walk in the show, it was cool, but Balenciaga just had snow in their fashion show. So it's like, you know, it makes you think, like, why did you come to my show then? Did you come just because, you know, am I supposed to copy and paste what I'm doing? Are you supposed to come to my show to see me do it at this level? Or are you supposed to come and appreciate the way I put this together and how I put it together and why?
Because,
I put
like, I'm going to speak on that, too. Like, it's a lot of copy and paste in fashion, and that's okay. Like, you know, you look at Supreme and stuff, it's a lot of copy and paste. You know, it's a lot of references. I mean, there was a guy who put out a book, Supreme Flips, or their shit is like carbon copied, and like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But again, with timing and like how you do it, it's like, you know, did they take a word that started with an S already and change it to Supreme, or did they just take any word, you know? Like, it's things like that, you know, which it's like, there's, you know, streetwear is, there's a lot of flips in streetwear, but then there's like certain things that make sense and there's certain things that don't, because you study it and then you find multiple ways in which it can work out. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, Supreme been putting these high fashion brands and box logos, you know? So like, there was already a Burberry Supreme box logo tee. So them revisiting that officially with Burberry, it makes a lot of sense. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they didn't do that. They waited until it was official to do it again, you know? Yeah. But that's Supreme's journey and saying, like, we're going to sell our clothes out of our store when we want, and then we're not going to. We're going to make this brand about skateboarding, but then we're not going to do this. You know, it's not about basketball. It's about skateboarding. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like,
we're still speaking to our audience.
You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Figuring out what your audience is and catering to them. Mm-hmm. But again, some people want to cater to everybody, like Polo or some shit. And it's like, you can grow to that, you know, but to each his own. I don't, like, it's not for me to determine, you know?
Exactly, yeah. What are some of the people, the biggest people in your life that influenced you in major ways?
I mean, initially, what are we talking about? Like, through history, or are we just talking about currently?
Anything that inspired you from the days you was at Tri-City to the aspirations that gave you to...
Well, the first name I said was, like, a Lupe Fiasco. I think because, like...
Oh, I'll be more specific. People have you met and that played a role in your life.
And I met Lupe Fiasco. I met Lupe Fiasco.
Don't do him like that, bro. He met Lupe. Don't do him like that.
I met him as... I met both times was as a fan, though. So it's like, I haven't met him as like, oh, this kid's a designer. You should fuck with him. So that's a thing. I mean, first off, Jeff Dixon from DTP. A lot of the things he said about business has always been true. And always been... He always was kind of like, in the future with that way of thinking. You know, also too, like, I don't know though, like, inspirationally speaking, it's like Anwar Carrots is someone who's had the most knowledge on the things that I've been doing. I really like the way Fujiwara like does his branding and stuff with the brand Fragment. So like, that's why I added design to Original Fonny, because it was Original Fonny, but I added design to it because it's like, okay, this is like a design company where we can kind of like, it's not limited to clothes. It goes into music. It goes into all these different things. I mean, those are things like, and then Joe Freshgoods is like, you know, a peer of mine who I've been able to watch the way he does things, and I really like it, you know? Mm-hmm. Joe Fresca is also, I think, like an ASAP Bari. I think the way he does things and, you know, dwells in the culture, but then had his own idea for, you know, how he wanted his brand to be, is super dope. Mm-hmm. And those are guys that, I think had a lot of inspiration on me and how I wanted to do my brand.
Yeah.
What do you feel like gets you excited about this nowadays, bro? Like, yeah. It's been like 10 years since you've been designing?
Yeah, it's probably like 10 years since I've been designing. I mean, people get me excited. I really like doing shoots, like, and stuff like that. So, like, actually just... It's just like the process, you know, like getting to the end of the process and executing it. That's exciting. As I grow, though, it's like you want it to get better and better. So it's also comes with like a level of stress. Like I just did two shoots recently and I'm not in love with either one of them. They're good, though, but I'm not in love with them. Mm-hmm. And that's just part of it because you want more and better for every part of what you're doing. So. That's, you know, it's fun. But then this could be stressful at times, too. But shit, I mean, I like to wear my clothes and have people have reactions to them, you know? Mm-hmm. That's the fun part.
Yeah. No, same, bro.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about putting a fast show together or even looked at yourself like that?
So, I would collaborate with a high fashion designer on a fashion show. It's kind of like how you see... And it would just be like a part, you know? It's kind of like how you see like Virgil use Futura in his fashion show. Mm-hmm. So I want to play the role of like the artist or a collaborator. I mean, there's a lot more examples that I've seen or like how Yoon from Ambush did. She's been doing all the jewelry at Dior for a minute. So, nice. I mean, if you look at it, you're like, oh, that's how Yoon would do it. You know what I mean? But... I mean, again, going back to Ambush, like, I don't hear people talking about Ambush. I know, like, for those who are really into fashion, they know about it, but I don't think that it's hit the mainstream hype or I haven't heard anybody rap about it or anything, you know? And it started, like, super hyped out, but then it's, like, just kind of trying to maintain that and be sustainable. But, yeah, I'm not a high fashion designer, so I'm a graphic designer. I could go to doing some high fashion stuff, but I just look at it like that. I mean, even going back to like Off-White shows and Virgil, it's like there's some high fashion stuff I see, you know? But then when I think about like the McQueen documentary, it's like there's no comparison to that, you know? This isn't like a... I don't look at an Off-White show. I say like, oh man, that was dope for me as a look. It's kind of the same way like Mastermind. It's a brand I really love named Mastermind. Mm-hmm. And they do shows too. But Mastermind is never like, they don't bring it up when they talk about like high fashion because they don't do anything avant-garde like that. It's like the same stuff, but it's on a runway. So, and I would look at Mastermind as like a streetwear brand, you know, Japanese streetwear. And I think even going back to, that's why I like about Japan and they're so inspirational to me because it's like, it's not so like chiseled out, like this is this and this is that. Like keep in mind in Japan, like rich people wear rhinestones too.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh... This isn't a diamond. It's like, that's a rhinestone. That looks cool.
Yeah.
This is a diamond. It looks cool, too.
Yeah.
They have different prices, but it doesn't determine the value of is it cool or not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like high fashion, like fashion show. I don't come from that world, so I feel like that's doing a disservice to the people who do sit and they're like, I'm trying to design a T-shirt that no one's seen before. Like, I don't think about it like that, you know? So I don't think about doing a fashion show. But, yeah, I would be into, like, collaborating with a high fashion designer on, you know, a couple pieces or a series of pieces or a line of pieces that exist within their show. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Because that same method right there is like, you know, being, I don't know, 16 when I started, that was the fight, you know, I put up with myself was, you know, since I started like this, this is what I was. And I'm talking about fashion designer. You know, like I fought that like my whole life. So did so many things. Created my own fashion show full, sold pieces, but then sat with him was like, yo, I know what I love, and that's the lifestyle I'm creating. Like back to the brand, instead of what it looks like, it's like I didn't just take this picture, or it doesn't just look like this, and then it's called wisdom. It's like a certain essence I put into the things I do and how they come out and how fun they look, in order for it to say wisdom, you know, in order for it to say, and people to say, I get Latif's touch. It's a childish mentality. It's almost like a Robin Williams or Jim Carrey aesthetic. Just like, how did you feel when you was a kid? And how can I now cultivate that within you, like as a black kid on a spaceship? And that's like, that's my feeling. And then as my life, I've been fighting with that up until at least 2020. Because that was a good moment to pivot and say, who am I? What am I doing? What does this mean? And that's important. Like that why right there to say, to just how you just saying, that's a disservice to whatever fashion designers that's out there and like really paying attention to detail and things like that. And then here we are like just wanting to be that because that's what it's supposed to look like. It's like that's a pivot right there that really changes the trajectory and success and idea and presence influence that you're going to have. And that's back to that, what the young designers in the city, just what, if you listen to this, like that's the vibe you should go for. It's like, what do you want to do? Cause it can be cartoons. It could be shoe design. It could be shoelace design. It could be, you know, structuring a brand's interior of their stores. And that's just what you do. And it's, you love it. So, you know, fall in love with that lifestyle and the feeling that whatever you're drawing out and creating and allowing it to bring you there, I think is like gold in the industry that we're in. Because when you get that, it does feel like I've got it. I got my piece. And now from there, I know what I'm doing. Yeah. You know, I mean, I enjoy this, but I know exactly when this company calls me what we're doing. And I can draw that out and it's going to look cohesive. And my story's going to be planted or printed.
Yeah, and I mean, things are also always subjective to like...
Mm-hmm. You come in.
Yeah, come in. Yeah. Things are always subjective to like how people's teaching. So that's what, like, I think that's the main idea, because going back to Virgil, he's an architect. So his main thing was like, well, I can engineer these shows. Yep. I can engineer these, like, there's so many different things I can engineer, and you can see that in his work, that it's like, oh, he's an architect. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Whether he's like, I'm going to work on a plane or a car, it's like, you can see his teachings in his work and hard, like, you know, how he uses hardware stuff and, you know, neons and stuff, and it's a construction, you know, or deconstructing an Air Force One.
Create something.
It makes a lot of sense for what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
You got Kanye West, he like, I'm an alien. Like, so at the end of the day, when you're looking at his shoes and stuff, it's alien. You haven't seen these shoes before. Yeah. You haven't seen this stuff before. They had a different idea. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's what you see in their work. And it doesn't make one person better than the other person. It's on you to choose, like, what you like.
So, like, even with that, think of the consumer right now, right? Because here you have a consumer now that can real-time comment on what you're doing in that realm. So look at a Virgil. Some consumers now with the intelligence they have on brands and things they've seen haven't even put one in one that Virgil's an architect. Look at the belt that he dropped in 2014. Like, you can tell.
But that's just consumerism. That goes back to what we were talking about. Like, that's them. Those are the people who aren't buying the belt anymore because it was hot. It's not anymore. And going back to that, you have, like, again, you have people who care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Probably Pyrex day ones. And then you got people who just, like, see it online and they're just like, I want to buy it. Like, it's being marketed to me. So it's like, and that goes back to the consumer. Like, the consumer is not always the designer, and it's not always supposed to give a fuck about the things that, you know, oh, he's an architect. I don't care, bro, because like I just want to wear it out today. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. again, it's on those who really appreciate that. But again, everyone's different. It's like we all eat, but if you love seafood, you're kind of like, or if you going back to that thing I said about McDonald's, like if you love steak and you love burgers, you're not satisfied with McDonald's anymore. Mm-hmm. You're like, no, I want Grindhouse. I want Vortex. I want.
My palate has changed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I want a better burger than this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But some people are like, man, fries are fries. Like, I don't care. Like, that's not my favorite
potato,
type of
potato,
food anyway.
Yeah, yeah,
I don't care.
Real.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't really eat burgers. So, you can give me a McDonald's burger, this, they don't care, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sean just joined us. I want to, if you, I don't know if you have your, like, a phone mic on you. And I want you to just chime in, introduce yourself while we're here. Yeah.
So we mentioned something about collaborations. What was your last collaboration you did, bro? Like as a, from a design perspective.
Last collab I did was with a liquor brand called I.W. Harper. We released like a holiday gift package.
Mm. So how do you go about, you know, channeling if you're going to collab with a brand or not?
I was connected to them through Cam Kirk. It made sense. It was a gift package for the holidays. I'm really into like, you know, gifting and stuff. I've always been in that to that. And then they handled production and seeded it. You know, it's my first actual collab with a liquor brand, so it's like made a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's dope. That's dope. And you, I see you wearing a collab you did with Devil Lock.
Correct.
Talk about that one a little bit, because I got my brand's called Jesus Was Black.
Okay.
So I love to hear more about the collab. Like
the Devil Lock collab came about, I personally had noticed a surge recently in like it's what you would call like archival Japanese streetwear.
Mm.
Like just the old stuff. So like right now, for instance, you can see a lot of kids are rocking like Hysteric Glamour. And I remember, like, I couldn't even find Hysteric Glamour, let alone find it in my size, because, again, this is a Japanese brand with, like, 70s vibes that came out in, like, the late 80s, I think, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like it's old, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But right now, people are wearing it, and that goes back to just, like, all the fashion kids really being into, like, archival brands in general. So it's like, obviously, like, you had high fashion trends and stuff in the last couple years. But then from there, it's like, okay, what's the old high fashion? Like, okay, we like Raf, but what's before Raf? So it's like, for Europe, it was JPG and Vivienne Westwood. And that's why you see all the kids and Vivienne Westwood. Because, again, it's high fashion, but mm-hmm. you can find it for the cheap because it's so old. And then you can also, like, thrift it. And now that it's popular again, you can find it for the cheap and sell it for the high, closer to what it was sold for because it's archival. So Devil Lock was a Japanese brand I'm aware of because, again, like I said, there's this brand Mastermind, Bape stuff, and all these brands collaborated in, like, the early 2000s and stuff. All these brands had, like, Metacom toy deals for the most part, too, where they had, like, their own toys and characters and stuff like that. So,
we gotta come back to that. I want to talk about that.
Well, I
know
Devil
it sounds like you got some history on that. I like that.
I hit Devil Lock up though via Instagram, seen the owner. I didn't even know they were still putting out clothes. I was like, yo, let's do a collab. They were like, I sent them, like, you know, like, I guess my brand deck. And, you know, just some pictures of some collaborations I've done before, because I did a collab with Extra Large, which was one of the first streetwear brands, but the Japanese own that. And then I did a collab
with the Gorilla on it.
And then I did a collab with 24 Karats as well, which is a Japanese brand. And they've done collabs with Mastermind, too. So, like, I'm like, look, I mean, I've already worked with people you have worked with. Let's work together. The idea that Satan is burnt, that's something I came up with myself, which, again, I think is cool with streetwear. Yeah. It's like you find, like, plays on words and stuff like that.
Fire,
but obviously, like, on some, like, literal shit, if the devil's in hell, he's would be burned, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then also too, it's just like around the same time, just seen a lot of dark brands, a lot of pentagrams, a lot of just all of this, and I was like, "That's I think it's burnt out to me personally." Ooh. Like a lot of
porn. I'm glad I asked you this, bro. That's I like that.
So that's where that idea
came from.
You gotta slap me up on it. I like that.
Right. I mean, I think honestly though,
like without this explanation and stuff like that, and you know, people not knowing the history of Devil Lock or whatever the fuck that means, like. Mm-hmm. Just went over people's heads, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like
kind of brought
it wasn't
down.
Necessarily received how I wanted it to be. I sold out of a lot of the black tees. A lot of celebrities told me, "Oh man, that's really dope. We love that idea," but it was not like it translated to like you know. And that goes back to you know you talk about Atlanta. Like if everyone's not intellectual and entertaining these ideas, like again, it's like did you say Fonny on it? I mean, at the same around that time, I noticed I was selling a lot more of stuff that just said OF on it, you know, because that's what people are familiar with.
Gosh,
yeah. So, like, if I'm gonna buy a hat that costs $80, which this hat was like $75, and then my big F hat was $75. They rather buy the big F hat because it's automatic. Like, this is just funny. I don't know what Devil Lock is.
Yeah.
So.
No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. And do you think when it comes to the art, do they have to know? Does it have to resonate? Or are you satisfied with, like, I know what that meant. And I wanted to, I mean, if it goes over your head.
I'm okay if it goes over your head, but the business isn't. And then also too, I mean, the point of an artist in the art is to get it out.
So connect, right.
Yeah, right. I made the tea, I put the mantra on it, but if it didn't sell out, I don't really feel like it was like, you know, executed the way I wanted it to, you know?
Yeah, for you.
Yeah, you wanna introduce yourself while you go?
Sean Woozy. I got a brand called Woo Plus that I started about 3-4 years ago, I think. And now I'm here at Closet with Latif and Malcolm.
Yes, sir. Yeah, man. I think that we met at Fizz Shop probably years ago. Yeah.
I met you, I think, before that, too, when outside of Wish.
Mm-hmm.
And you were waiting to give Zeus a shirt or something.
Probably,
like that.
Yeah. Probably like 20, back. Yeah. Which is crazy. That's probably 2014. That's the beginning.
Man.
Yeah.
I see it all.
Yeah, see, it's tight, man. But, I think that I think I've asked every question I could think about.
I got one more for
you. Yeah, I want to hear.
It's what I asked you before.
Yeah, you go first. You go first.
Do you have a word that you living by right now? Like, mine's is activation. Like, it's just in the back of my head. Like, whatever I'm at, like, I'm just trying to activate. Even if it's just me stepping in the room, my presence is felt, whatever, you feel me? Like, that's just kind of my subconscious mantra that I live by, you feel me?
Right. Yeah, I don't have a word that I'm living by. I mean, I would like to think I'm righteous, you know? So I like that whole idea. And then, I mean, a while ago, I was telling some people just, like, as far as, like, a team is concerned, for me, like, it's, like, the word fruition is big. I noticed Kanye was using that a lot, too. But it's like, I mean, I just like to see the idea come to life.
Yeah.
That makes me happy, you know? But again, like, that's just one part of it, too, because it's like, comes to life and then you want to see it move. Like, imagine I did the Devil Lock shit, and then, like, I'd be wearing the hoodie out now, the hat out. You know, even your reaction, you're like, man, that shit is dope. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like, the people buying it at the store were, like, a little bit of Christian vibes that people were buying it, but then it wasn't hitting. Like, even from, like, the comments on the gram and stuff like that. When I went to L.A., I couldn't, like, people were, like, begging me, like, where do I need to find this, blah, blah, blah. And then I even bumped into a guy when I did the pop-up at Anwar's. He was doing a pop-up with another guy named Sho, and Sho is Japanese. And again, it's funny because this said so much to me. For one, he was like, Devil Lock a lab? That's fucking crazy. So from there, Anwar is talking to him. He's like, yo, you know, Fonny damn near Japanese. Like, look at his outfit. Like, you know, and he's like, man, that's crazy. He's like, to be honest, when I was coming up as a kid, I thought that shit was super tight.
Yeah.
Same way I thought LRG is super tight. But today, he didn't even know that they were still making clothes. So, I mean, even going back to the drop, could be archival and all that. Like, I can look at my sales. I didn't have one sale out of Japan. And my stuff sells in Japan. You know what I mean? I'll get probably like 2 to 3 orders from Japan per drop. You know what I mean? But like, nothing, you know? Like, on this one specifically, I can like, okay, I dropped this. Shouldn't I be... I can see...
It feels more tangible just because it's a collab from a brand.
Well, no, but I could see, like, if Japanese people were ordering it, meaning that I did a collab with a Japanese brand, and not one Japanese person ordered it from what I could see. So, but they're, like, they're restarting. They're just, like...
They're coming back outside.
They're coming back. So, it's like, do the Japanese kids know about it? No. They're, like... They know about Palm Angels. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's crazy because that's what's relevant. Yeah. Mind you, they're all looking over here, you know? So it's like, they're not, they're like Off-White here in Preston, like St. Michael. They're on some like whatever's new, you know? Mm. So it's just like, it's interesting. You would think like, it takes like brands like Supreme, like after it grew to being as hyped as it was, had the power to kind of like put a lot of attention on a brand that we didn't necessarily care about. And a good brand, a good example of that is like Undercover. Because I remember when I used to see Undercover all the time, being in Atlanta, I would be like, I'm not buying that. I don't really know what it means. You know what I mean? I'd be like, Undercover, like, I don't know if like Undercover. That seemed a little weird to me. You know what I mean?
No, I feel you. I feel
but
you.
But as time went on, like, first off, they have some of the best Supreme collabs. Like, it's like the Undercover collabs and the Comb collabs are like be the best ones every season. So it's like,
one favorite.
That put niggas onto Undercover. And then they started looking at Undercover. Also, too, Rock Tees are big. And June's whole thing, like, around the same time, like, Rock Tees become big in our culture. Like vintage Rock Tees. Like you go into like find like a Rock Tee from the thrift store, and because it's actually came from the tour, you can now sell this t-shirt for $100, $200, $300. I don't know. Same way Fear God popped around this same time too. So it's like if you look at the trends, like Undercover shit is all about rock. Undercover number 9, it's all punk rock flips and shit like that, and then that shit has a place to come in, you know.
It's easy.
After they do a Supreme collab, you know.
Yes,
yeah, like I'm not Supreme, so I could do a Devil Lock collab, but that doesn't mean it's gonna put enough kids onto it to say, okay, let's do the research and figure out why this is dope, you know?
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So, I mean, that's just how that works.
You can't predict shit, too, man. That's what
you can forecast trends, though. You know, I mean, again, please believe on the other flip side of it, like, when kids started looking at archival European fashion, Supreme knows that. So, like, they had Jean Bart Gaultier collab, like, literally, like, Cardi's wearing it, Uzi's wearing it, Supreme drops a collab. And then they had Pucci collab. Emilio Pucci was probably like the last Supreme collab from a vintage designer, European designer. But it's like, again, it's on trend. Like Pucci is some shit like your girls will wear now that they can go find, source the old shit. You can sell it like it's new because it's vintage high fashion, you know?
Yeah.
I got two closing questions. What is the one thing, and any shape, direction, point of what in life and what you're doing that you feel like you're missing that will change or
take our structure? I was saying that earlier because I mean, like again, you guys have seen, and I'm doing a lot of this stuff by myself, but like for every brand you we name or it's huge or whatever, it's like it's at least 10 people. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, I'm was late for this podcast, but then we had to run and do some other stuff. I got Sean here. We had to go get keys made for the store. It's like, it's only one me, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, structure allows you to have team, you know, and understand like who's playing what role. And then you have growth there, which goes outside of like my vision and like, you know, because I have a big vision, but it's like you can like execute all of the things to, you know, have fruition of that with the team, you know.
And then what's one of your dream collabs? Dream, yeah, collabs. That's a good.
I really want to work with Converse. I want to work with Levi's. I want to work with Neighborhood. Those are like right now. I know they're doing collabs. I mean, I want to do some shit with Mastermind too, but they're so. Although I watched an interview with the owner too, and he was just saying, like most Japanese people say, like, hey, look, if it's cool, let's do it. It's not about how much money we can make. Mm. It's not about everything else. Like, whoa, you guys do a lot of stuff in black. All our stuff is made in black. So let's do it, you know? That's another point of me feeling like, you know, just having the flagship of Atlanta or in Atlanta. It's like a lot of brands, they're into Atlanta. They just don't trust it. And they don't know what to trust there. Yeah. They don't know. They can't see in a brand that, oh, this identifies with us. You can just see that sometimes in product shots, you know. So it's just like, that's for me, is also just like bringing cool brands to Atlanta. But yeah.
I mean, yeah, I saw you bring J-Tips a while back. That was dope. That was dope to see J-Tips come down here.
Where, yeah, and that wasn't me personally. That was Malachi, I wish, connected him. Yeah, but
Malachi.
Cool, yeah.
Yeah, man. That was all of my questions I had for you, man. And any last thing you'd like to say, or
any last wisdom you want to share, man?
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, I appreciate y'all. I think I said a lot of stuff. And I think, yeah, I mean, this shit will continue to grow. So.
Yeah. Thank y'all for listening. This is the Free Wisdom Podcast, and we're signing out, man. Until next time.
Holla.